I think that one difference is the clear cut between Sila Samadhi and Panya. So, the Eightfold Path is Sila Samadhi and Panya. Sila, that is normally taught everywhere. Panya is also taught everywhere. It's called Vipassana. But here, Vipassana and Samadhi are differentiated, very clear. So when we do Vipassana, we do Vipassana and not Samadhi. We're not trying to get calm, but we just do Vipassana. When we do investigation, we just do investigation. When we do calm, we do just calm. This is one of the main differences. Normally it's only done Vipassana and calm, you know, it's within the Vipassana somehow buried up. And there's a reason. We have to understand things. We have to understand what is calm and what is Vipassana. We have to understand what are the five khandhas. We have to understand what is the body and what is feeling. What's the difference between body and feeling? What's the difference between sanya and sankara? That means thought and memories, or association and labels. What is the difference between vijnana and vedana and vijnana and sanya and vijnana and sankara? So if we don't start, you know, with a clear cut in the beginning, you know, we get all muddled up. And when we all get muddled up, you know, we will never understand. Only if you see the things clearly, that's when you understand. And we don't understand with our brains, but we understand with our heart. And that is one of the main differences. But to get that across, it's very difficult. What is the difference between an insight that takes place in the heart and something that we assume or that we take home, just to understand, through our normal understanding? Yes, if you're going to investigate, we have to understand this is sanya, this is sankara, and this is vijnana. This is Vedana and this is the body.
Aren't they just labels? The things are different than...
At the moment they are just labels, but there are five groups, you know. There are five groups. And the five groups are so important because that's what we call I. This combination or this agglomeration of things we call I. And when we call it I, we don't say, you know, this was just a thought, or this was a memory, or this was Vedana, or this, you know. We say, I feel sick, you know, or I think like this, or my opinion is like that, you know. And then we stay until the end of our life, you know, into the muddle. If we don't differentiate, this is thought, this is memory, or this is association, this is consciousness, this is feeling, and this is body. We will never be able to understand. If we muddle it up and say, yes, I. Or if we just do it, you know, like it's very often proposed in the West, you know, just observe what is coming in. We can observe it till the end of our life and we will not understand a thing. That's where the difference is. If we observe it, we observe it with trying to understand. Okay, this is feeling, or this is Vedana. Vedana just has arisen, Vedana just passed by. And stay on and stay with it. And also, you know, if you don't have enough power of concentration, we will not catch it. That's why samadhi comes in first. That's why the ability to concentrate on one object comes in first. If we can stay on one object for 10 minutes without our mind going here and there, then we can start with our investigation. And samadhi is there also to rest our mind, to take a break, you know. You're going to sleep, you know, in the night. Because you cannot work, you know, all day long and all night long. And that's why we take a break in samadhi. And just be it upachara samadhi, that's enough. But if it's apana samadhi, the rest is much clearer. It's like if you have a deep sleep, you know, you feel much more rested than if you're just sleeping, you know, half dreamy sleep. That's where the main differences lie. And also, you know, of course, with investigation. investigation of the body. Investigation of our body and asupa. You understand asupa. Asupa is the loathsomeness or the ugly things or the unpleasant things. To bring them up. Ask the people, you know, what is, you know, how to overcome greed and hate. And you won't find a teacher in the West who can tell you how to overcome greed and hate. They just say, let go. If you tell an aunt, you know, that is on the top of the roof that wants to go down, you know, just let yourself drop. It doesn't know. It just knows, you know, to take one step at a time. And then we'll reach the floor. That's where the main thing is. We cannot just let go. If we could just let go, you know, just within a minute, we would be all in line. Just let go of avijja. Okay, bye. Go. It cannot be done. Greed and hate cannot be just let go. Of course, we train ourselves not to buy into it. When we see greed coming up, then we don't buy into it. So then it becomes weaker. But the root of greed and the root of hate will not be destroyed by this. And that's where one of the main differences in all the teachings. This is the emphasis here. Asupa, asupa, asupa. And why asupa? Because all our life we were looking for the pleasant thing. So if you think of asupa and supa, you know, supa is the pleasant things and asupa are the unpleasant things. If you think of that as a scale, then our scale is way out of balance. And how do you get it into balance, you know? You have to bring up the asupa. Otherwise you will never be able to bring it into balance. And why do you bring it into balance? Because if you want to overcome greed and hate, you have to go right through the center. And if you don't have balanced it out, you know, how can you go through the center? That means, you know, and there's nobody, you know, who can explain that process, you know, of really going through greed and hate. And only, you know, when greed and hate is gone, you know, an anagami can be born. And then the investigation of the body is finished. He's not yet a full anagami, because the images are still in his mind. So he has to get rid of the images before he can turn into a full anagami. And then he has to work on the other four fetters. But if you don't bring up the asupa, if you don't bring up the ugliness, and being able to stay with the unpleasant feelings that arise, and that arise of course, and that's why we avoid it. And especially in the West, we avoid it. You know, all these things. You know, Buddhism must be something pleasant, you know. Must be peaceful. And if I do something, you know, that brings up a lot of hate or a lot of unpleasant feeling, then this cannot be right. And that's where our problem stands. Of course it is right. And if it doesn't bring up these unpleasant things, we are just playing around. So we have to bring it. And that's the first thing, you know, we have to do asupa, asupa, asupa. Investigating the body inside, outside, from top to bottom, from bottom to top, from inside to outside, from outside to inside. And dissect it and put it bring it into its bits and pieces. Everything. Be it an organ, be it the organ of the skin or being the hair or being anything, any object. Until it falls apart into the four elements. Or until we understand. Until, and we do that, like Tanaja Mahabodha tells, we do that until there is no pleasant things arising anymore. Then we are a little bit above the skin. And then we bring up the pleasant things again. And then our main play starts. Then we destroy the pleasant things with the unpleasant things. And then we destroy the unpleasant things with the pleasant things. So we use this as a playing ground to understand what it is. We still don't understand it at that time. We all the time we brought up the unpleasant feelings and unpleasant things. So now we are going to play with it. Once they are about in the balance, we are going to play with it. We destroy a supa with supa. And that goes in a click. Yeah? And we destroy supa with asupa. And that goes so fast until we are spotted, until we spot it, until we can hold both in the mind. It goes so fast within a flash of lightning that we can destroy one thing by the other. That means we can destroy an unpleasant thing, unpleasant feeling with a pleasant feeling. Or the pleasant feeling with an unpleasant feeling. But that needs, you know, that needs a lot of training. And that is the only way. And then when we can do that, all the time, then we hold both of them without destroying them. And see through them. Only then can we pass through greed and hate. That's the only way. There's no other way. So if we want to come to the stage of anagami, we have to do this. If we like it or not. And that is the difference. It's not taught anywhere. It's taught mostly here in this monastery. Mostly Tanaja Mahapo. At Tanchai I didn't come across, but I didn't read a lot. He went out, you know, he went out and helped the anagamis. Because the anagamis at a certain stage, they think they're finished. Because everything has disappeared. So they think they're finished. Completely finished and completely rested. So he went and visited them and told them, well, there's a little thing. It's called avicca that is still lurking in the back. If he wouldn't have gone the way, you know, he wouldn't know. The avicca is so bright. It's at that time, you know, when you look at Life of Inequality, the 10th chapter, how it describes avicca. It's so wondrous. It's so amazing, you know, that you think you're at the end of it. And then look, you know, what the teachers in the West are teaching. They're teaching the simple things. When it comes to a super, you know, then most of them are very quiet. It's especially quiet when it comes to a super, when it comes to the body. Ajahn, I haven't heard him talking about it. Ajahn, same thing. They talk about just awareness or mindfulness. But actually, you know, mindfulness, I said last time already. If it's really mindfulness, then we should rephrase the word and say mind emptiness. Then this is awareness. This is sati. When we talk about sati, then it's all actually mind emptiness. The mind emptiness where its true nature of awareness or knowingness comes up. That's what is called sati. And within this state of sati, or within the state of mind emptiness, the kilesas have no power. They cannot intrude. It took me a while to understand when Tanaja Mahapo said, you know, when there is sati, the kilesas cannot come in. But if you take it as mind emptiness, then of course the kilesas cannot come in. They have no power in that state. So when we are mindful, or when we are mind empty, then we are really doing our work. Or if you rephrase it and say fully concentrated, if the mind is fully concentrated on one object, it's similar. So this is the important thing. Last time I said, you know, I talked about the four treasures. Huh? The trash, it's not even mentioned in this tradition, Sotapanna and Sakadagami. They are mentioned, but you know, they're no special importance. All the importance is given to the Anagami. The one who has gone beyond greed and hate. And the investigation of this body, if you take it from inside to outside and outside to inside and let it fall into its element. This is the one, you know, that leads you through all these three stages. stages of Sotapanna, Sakadagami, and Anagami. That's why there is no special emphasis, you know, on Sotapanna and Sakadagami. The only true, and that is that only holds, of course, you know, for people who are ordained or for people who give up their lives, you know, to want to reach freedom. So, that's the work we have to do. And that's what I was doing 6 years. 6 years on. The moment I came here and I understood, and I tell you the difference because then I've been trained for 6 years in the West. And it took me a while to understand the difference in all of the practice. Because it sounded very similar. Everything sounded just similar. Until I really understood the difference. And the difference is there, asupa. And in sati, mindfulness, in distinguishing between this. Not just blurring it out. Just knowing what is happening right now at the moment. If it's wrong or right, it doesn't matter so much in the beginning. If you say this is Vedana and actually was memory, you know, it doesn't matter. As long as you get it in one of the categories. And it will come, you know, it will become clearer over time and over time. You just sit there and put the things that arise and cease, you know, in one of these categories. So that you understand there is nothing else. And then you will understand, if you do that long enough, there's nothing else than these five groups. There's no I involved. Understand that? There's no I involved. There's just these five groups constantly occurring and dying away. Arising and ceasing away. And it's our attachment that keeps it. If you leave our attachment, that just arise and cease. Arise and cease. But through our attachment, they boil up. Out of a little stone becomes a huge snowball or avalanche. We have to catch it, we have to understand it, we have to be mindful of it, we have to be aware of the processes going on inside us. Once we have enough mindfulness, or once we have enough awareness, and can be, and are able to concentrate on one point for long enough time, then we can start with our investigation. So in the investigation, the primary investigation for the next years to come until we reach the stage of anagami is the body. Not the namakanda. In the West they love to investigate the namakanda because it's much easier. But in the body you understand, please understand and please take it to heart. It's the pot of earth that grows the plant or the tree of greed and hate. If we do not destroy it, everything else is just futile. We cannot investigate the namakandas before we understand the body. But of course, when we investigate body, you know, Vedana is very close. It can be a bodily feeling or mental feeling. We can investigate Vedana in concurrency. So these are the two things that we investigate. Bodily feelings in the body. Bodily feelings in the body. From the morning we wake up till the evening we close our eyes. And then once a day we rest in samadhi, be it upachara samadhi or apana samadhi. If you see what Thanachan Mahabodha has done, when he went to see a Thanachan man, he trained himself to go in samadhi. And Thanachan man was a very wise teacher. So Thanachan Mahabodha gets stuck, I mean stuck in quotation marks, you know, not really stuck, in samadhi. For 5 years. And Thanachan man didn't think, you know, it was important that to pull him up. But after 5 years he thought, okay, now it's time. Now his samadhi is as rock solid as anything else. Now you can go and do investigation. And then, when you look at the schedule, within 8 months, he has done this investigation of the body from top to bottom until everything disappeared. Within 8 months. If we don't have this rock solid samadhi or concentration, you know, it will take us 8 years or 8 lives or I don't know how much. So it's not a shame, you know, to get stuck into samadhi. I don't worry about anybody getting stuck in samadhi. It's, as long as, you know, the moment his samadhi is rock solid, you know, wherever he sits or wherever he is, he can get it. Then it's time to really do investigation. But if we have troubles, you know, we can start investigation, as I said, when our concentration is stable enough. It helps. Investigation helps develop samadhi, and samadhi helps develop investigation. That is, of course, clear. Sila helps helps you know samadhi, and also helps panya. And panya also helps you know sila. And concentration also helps you know to see the little subtleties in our not keeping the sila. So they all work together, all hand in hand. It's not that we have to develop one first and then the other later. They all work in hand in hand. But of course, you know, that what lacks most, we have to develop first. And that is our ability to concentrate. Our ability actually to be aware of the things going on. Not constantly thinking I'm doing this or I'm doing that or I'm like this or I feel sick, you know, or I'm sad or I'm depressed or whatever. What is this? There is depression. You know, there's the second characteristic, anatta. That is not me, the Lord Buddha teaches us. This is not me, that is not myself, that does not belong to me. We can use this as our help. If there's a feeling or if there's a memory coming up that really clutches to us, then we can use this. This is not me, this is not myself, that does not belong to me. Whatever we can observe cannot be the observer. Or are you this color? You see it. You clearly see it. But you never get the idea, you know, to say this is me. But when we see, the moment we look at the body, we immediately get the idea, this is me, you know. Why? Just because it's closer? I sit very close, you know. You still don't get the idea. Understand this clearly, you know. There's an observer, or there's the knowing nature of the heart. And there's the object to be known about. There cannot be the same thing. So a feeling that arises cannot be, you know, who knows about the feeling? The feeling doesn't know about itself a thing. Huh? The body doesn't know about itself a thing. Memory doesn't know itself. Thinking doesn't know itself. So there must be somebody, you know, who can observe all these things. And you know, sits in the background. But he's not these things, so he's not attached. But we fool ourselves, you know, calling this I and this mine. The body's I and the body's mine. This is my feeling, you know. And when I'm sad, you know, this is my feeling. I clutch to this sadness. I'm attached to this sadness. Or depression, you know, I'm so much attached to this. Be it either negative or positive, it doesn't matter. We're attached to all these things. So anatta, the principle of anatta helps us. Not you have to reduce this attachment and then to investigate. There's a feeling, okay, it has arisen, you know, it will cease. It has to cease. The nature, it's the nature of it. A thought has arisen, you know, it will cease. It's the nature of it. But because we attach to it, and say, this is me, I'm sick, or I'm terrible, you know, I feel terrible. I'm feeling terrible. Who is feeling terrible? That's feeling. Or that's memory. Just because we remember the sad story in the past, you know, we feel sad. Or a happy story, and we feel happy. Get this clear, you know. As I said, you know, we have to get the things clear. There is not a lot we have to understand about the practice. There are the Four Noble Truths we have to understand. There is dukkha. The origin of dukkha is our attachment, tanha. And there's an end of dukkha and there's a way leading out of dukkha. Sila, samadhi, and panna. Anicca, anatta, dukkha. All the things in this conventional reality arise and cease. Arise, change, and cease. All things in this universe are not me, are not mine, do not belong to me. And if we attach to them, they are dukkha. And then we need to understand the four elements. The element of air, fire, water, earth. If we investigate our body, we can let it drop down into the four elements. When we investigate food, it's the same thing. We can investigate it, drop, you know, dissect it into the four elements. That's all what we need to know. And the five khandhas of God. Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara and Vinyana. That's all. More we don't need to understand if we want to go the path. Yes, karma of course, it's important. If you're stuck with something, you know, and say, this is the result of my action that I've done in the past, okay. Let's smile and, you know, God just goes through. You cannot change it. Karma you can't change, you know, it has arisen because of old deeds, or old thoughts, old action. We cannot change the things that are just arisen now, but we can change our attitude towards them. And not making them arise in the future. That's the only power we have. Now. So it's a waste of time to be in the past. Only if you reflect about some wholesome things that we have done, that had some wholesome results that we have done in the past and we have forgotten or lost. Then it's useful, our memory. But most of the time it's just past. You know, we're riding in the past, riding along. And then hours and hours pass by. What have we done? Nothing. In terms of practice, we have done nothing. We just were bored, you know, and then let our thoughts go into the past or in the future. What can we do tomorrow? What can we see? Where are we going to go? Must be very boring right now. If you think this thought, you know, it must be, because your mind is going here and there, if you think it must be very boring right now, then you understand a little bit. What is boring? Because you're not interested in the object observed. That's why it's boring. So the mind looks for some other occupation. Get the mind one-pointed and then you see how many occupations he has. Or it has. See it, understand it clearly. Get it clearly. Get it really. Get it crisp, clear. And then there's no need, you know, if you get it crisp, clear, and then the heart understands immediately, oh, this is like this, oh, this is like this, this leads to this, you know, and if it leads to something unwholesome, the heart lets go. The citta itself, the knowingness, if the knowingness knows that it's something, you know, like the child puts the hand in the fire, it doesn't do it a second time. And this is something like the knowingness, or insight, what we call insight. Deep inside, in the true nature of things. We don't do it again. And that is the only thing that lets go. But this is something that we cannot call upon. You understand that? We just cannot let go. What we can do is, we do not need to follow, or we can follow. Follow wholesome things, or not follow unwholesome things. But we cannot let go. Got that? There's no letting go. We have to understand the heart is the one that can let go. But we have no control over the heart. So we have to teach the heart. See it? Understand it? No? You haven't understood? Okay, do it again. Until it understands. And it understands then when it's very crisp and very clear. Very obvious, eh? Then the heart understands and lets go on its own. Before that, we still are prone to do that. Until the heart doesn't see it, until the heart doesn't get the insight that this is something unwholesome, that's where it burns its heart. It will not let go. This is the power of avijja. It clouds everything. So, to uncloud the things is to see them crisp and clearly, or? So this is the way of practice. To really uncloud it. To really see it crisp and clear. And that's where we need a lot of awareness. And that's why it's called sati is so important. That is the only shortcut if you want to get in line. Have enough sati, or have sati for 7 days and seven nights without a lapse. That is the only shortcut that exists. The Lord Buddha taught it. So. But most of the time I haven't seen anyone be able. At that time of the Lord Buddha, there was a group of 20 or something like that. Could do it in a week. Most of us, it takes years or lives because our mindfulness is going here and there. Our mind is going all over the place. It doesn't like to stay at one point. So that is the training at the beginning. Until we can make the mind stay at one point, either the breath or the Buddha. Investigation is not one point. Investigation, the mind has to turn around things. So it's not really leading to peacefulness. The mind has to dissect the things, you know, investigate the things, ask the things, what is this? How did it come across? What's the nature of it? Why does everything that comes out of this body smell and stinks and we don't want to see? That's the question we have to ask, so the mind cannot be at one point. So we have first to get it on one point so that it doesn't switch the subject so easily. When we investigate one subject, then we investigate just this subject for the whole session, if it be 1 hour or 3 hours or 6 hours, no matter what. And when we do samadhi, we just do samadhi. And not, you know, within the middle, oh, I feel quiet, you know, now I do investigation. That's wrong. You do it until you get. And then when you determined in the beginning, okay, I'm going to sit for this, or I'm doing walking meditation for that, I'm doing samadhi, then you do it. And you don't stop in the middle because, yeah. Get it clear, get it crisp. You understand now the importance of getting things clear. There's not much, you know, we have to know. There's not much we have to understand. You can say it in 5 minutes. There are so many books about this and this and this and this. It gives us, makes our heart heavy with opinions and views. Because we don't know what they are talking about. We have an idea. Like we see a signpost to Rome, you know, we might have an idea. Yeah? If the signpost is very beautiful, we think Rome must be very beautiful. If the signpost, you know, is just run down, you know, we might think, you know, Rome is run down. But the signpost has nothing to do with Rome. And we have only, you know, we only make our opinions because of all the signposts we see. And only Nibbana, we think, you know, what is Nibbana like? Get your own experience of it, then you know. What's the use of, you know, having all these opinions and views about it? It doesn't help us, you know. It not only helps us, but it also hinders us. Because we're looking then for a certain experience. Or for a certain sight, you know. We have a view or imagination, Rome should be like this, you know, and then we actually enter Rome and we think, no, this cannot be Rome. Or this cannot be samadhi. Because we think, you know, samadhi must be like this, or samadhi must be like this, or deep samadhi must be like this, or upachara samadhi must be like that. Upachara samadhi can be enormously different. For the one person, you know, it's completely different to the other person. Upper samadhi or deep state of samadhi is very similar to all. But upachara samadhi is also. You have two people and you have two different. So, get the things clear. I mentioned that it took Tenachan only 8 months to investigate the body or to get beyond greed and hate after 5 years of samadhi. But it took him about 2.5 years, or nearly 3 years, to cut down on sanya sankhara, the namakandas. Because that's what is the main illusion. That's what we... What is it? Greed, hate, that is what is delusion. And when delusion has gone, there's only avijja. That's why people, you know, when the delusion is gone, think they are ready, that they are done. Delusion is within the namakanda. Vedana is gone. Investigated already. So it's sanya sankara. This quick combination of sanya sankara that takes, you know, that makes up everything. Once this is gone, there's only a avijja left. And avijja is amazing. It's so amazing that you think it's a real thing. But you have to see how it arises and it sees. It does arise and it does see. So quickly that we can't catch it. When we go in a movie, we know, you know, when we know that there are 25 pictures per second. Or in USA, you know, 30 pictures per second. And that makes the movie. That makes us actually believe, you know, that something is happening, huh? But, you know, one picture is different from the other. Just because they are played so fast, you know, they make up a movie. Now think about the thought, the mind moments we have within a blink of the eye are 3,000. So, how to get at it? This is vijnana. How to get at it? So what happens if vijnana is not there? Vijnana arises and ceases. So what is happening when vijnana is not there? And it just ceases, you know? Get it? Get to know it for yourself. It's not impossible, but we have to put all our determination there to get there. All our effort and determination in one thing, we want to understand. We really want to understand. But not with our mind, you know, our heart will. We want to teach our heart that it understands. And then we can do it. Why shouldn't we? We have done so much in the past, you know, that we could come here. So it's up to us what to make out of it. However long it takes, you know, it will take that long. For some person it's longer, and for some other people it's short. I think, what was it? I think 9 years. From the moment Thanacha Mahapur went to Thanacha Man, it took him 9 years. But before he practiced a little bit, but he mostly studied. So he knows the scriptures, I don't know. He never studied. In Lumpuli it took 4 years. Lumpuli, it took 4 years. But he was with Thanacha Mahapur day in, day out, for 4 years, just the two of them. And then you can imagine what it is. It's hell, 4 years of hell. He didn't have a rest. Whenever he was doing something wrong, he got it. So, but he managed, you know. He stayed with him. He stuck with him. Thanacha Mahapur was very strict. So in the beginning, you know, it was difficult to stick with him. But if people, you know, have the intention, you know, to overcome it, then they'll stick with a strict teacher. I haven't seen too many people, you know, stick. I'm not very strict, but, you know, the people just disappear. It's too much for them. No, they just can't handle it. Well, you know, they get there, oh, well, this is, you know, this is not necessary, or that is not necessary, and then I just let them go. They're not interested. The moment it gets difficult, you know, they turn away. They find for an easier way out. Isn't it? They're looking for another teacher in which it's softer. Yeah? And then after years they notice, you know, it hasn't brought them anything, if they ever notice. It's not the teacher that is soft, you know, that brings us, you know, to enlightenment. It's a teacher who is strict with our kilesa, extremely strict. Not with us. We have to understand that. He's not strict with us, you know, he has a lot of metta, you know, to show. It took me a long time to understand. Why was he picking always on me? The others were doing just the same thing. Why was he picking only on me? You know, the others doing the same thing. And he picked on me. Until I understood, you know, that he has matter, and he thought, you know, maybe this people understand. But in the beginning, of course, I thought, you know, just like everybody thinks, why does he pick on me? Why has he always to come, you know, when I do something right, you know, he never shows up. You know? Whenever I do something wrong, he is immediately behind my back. You know? Why me? Why not the other? Give me a break, I wanted to say. But then I understood, you know, it's actually, you know, very good training. Whenever, you know, the citta goes the wrong way, you know, it tells you immediately. So you don't have to waste a lot of time doing the wrong thing or going the wrong path. But it's difficult, no? And that's what I understand. It's double as difficult for Westerners who have so much conceit, who know things all better. But I think I mentioned it, you know, we have to overcome conceit before we can get liberated. So who is conceited? What is it? It's a memory, or it's a thought, or it's a, you know, what is an opinion? Opinion is not within the five khandhas. What is it? Is it a thought, a memory, or a combination of thought and memories? That's what it is. Combination of thought and memories that are really heavy. So get to know it for yourself. Understand the principles, how everything works. And that makes us free, or that sets us free. And the freedom is not within the body, don't even imagine. The freedom is not within the khandhas. The khandhas will be free, you know, but they still have their old ways to go. Memory still will arise. Eh? The body is still there. The freedom is within the heart, or within the citta. That sees it, you know, and says, you know, just like you, you know, you watch a movie, you know, whatever movie it is on, you know, you watch it. You observe it. But you're not concerned with it. But at the moment, you're pretty much concerned with it. If a feeling arises that is unpleasant, you're very upset. Or if the body changes, or if the body gets sick, you're upset, you know, until the sickness goes, and then afterwards, after a few days, you don't remember it anymore. But during the time, you know, of sickness, you think, you know, you constantly think you're either going to die or how bad this is. And then the sickness has left and we don't give a second thought. That's how things are. Just observe them, just understand them within your own sphere, within your own heart, just understand. Understand it clearly. Don't get muddled up. From the beginning when you start your practice, don't muddle up things. Don't muddle them up. Get things as they are. You know? This is this, this is this, this is it. Just make it clear from the beginning. Yeah? The muddle is nothing else than the power of avijja that wants to lure us into thinking. This is this or this is like that. We know, or the heart knows. That is the only quality that is left over, when everything else disappears. The knowing nature of the heart. The heart knows. It has known all along. And it will continue to know. But there's nothing, you know, that can lure us into attachment to this or to that. We don't mind, you know, when we see, you know, see animals dying, you know, far away, you know, that's, you know, they die. Okay. We know that they have pain and we feel, you know, that they have pain. You know? We know we can't help them, so it's ready to die. You know, we just observe it. But even now we cannot do it. We feel the urge, you know, to do something. And now we're going to think about your own body. When it breaks up, when it's going to die, how much are we worried about it? So get the things clear. Get to know it within your own heart. It's there all the time. It's just that we don't care to look. We just don't care. We really don't care. We do everything not to look. Where the things arise and cease. We look everywhere else. We look outside, you know, at the country, at this country, at that country, at this city, at that city, at this person, at that person. But we never look in our heart. So. And with this I end my talk. Are there questions?